The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I want to do questions and answers this week. And I offered that if anybody didn't feel comfortable asking a question out loud, that you could write something down and bring it up here. But I don't see it, that anybody has done that, so I'm assuming nobody has done that. But if you have, feel free to pass the questions to Maureen. I just like to open it up for questions. I mean, I sit here each week and think of things to say, but I like to hear back from you what's going on and what kind of questions you have. That will help me to be able to speak to you more effectively. So I'm hoping there are some questions.
Could you talk about working with panic and anxiety, please?
Panic and anxiety. Is my mic on? Is it on? Okay. This seems to be a topic that's up these days. The world is seems to be a panic or anxiety producing place. So, this is a huge topic. I'll try to say something relevant in a few minutes. A lot of times, panic and anxiety, well, they're slightly different things, I think. Anxiety tends to be a more pervasive kind of thing, and panic, I think, seems to come, it's a more specific thing, a specific event to a particular event, or if you have panic attacks to a non-event, but it's a very specific thing. And often, at least with anxiety, and with panic, there are a lot of thoughts that go with them. We're thinking about the thing that we're panicked about. We're thinking about the thing that we're anxious about. And one of the main ways to work with it, I mean, basically they get into a kind of a panic, I think, in particular, gets into a kind of a runaway loop. You know, it tends to feed itself really quickly. And that's what a panic attack is about. You know, the heart gets really beating really fast and the breathing gets short, so that the panic attack kind of runs away with itself. And the thoughts can feed the panic. So one of the things to do, and I'll talk about actual panic attacks in a minute because they're a little different than this. I think often panic attacks aren't particularly connected with anything in particular. They're just, coming up, and it's not so clear where they're coming from. But if there's panic coming, for instance, around swine flu, which might be something that some of you might be a little nervous about, then there's thoughts around that. And one of the best ways to work with this is to turn the attention away from the thing in the world that you are panicked about or anxious about, and turn your attention to the experience itself. What does it feel like to be a human being that's worried, that's anxious, that's feeling this feeling of uncontrollability, of panic? So turning the attention back, rather than trying to control or manipulate the world, turning the attention towards the experience itself. Now, this can be really challenging with something like with these kind of difficult states of anxiety or panic, because the experience itself is so unpleasant. The feeling of panic, the feeling of anxiety is so unpleasant that, in some ways we can rebound off of it. We find it that it's so unpleasant that we just don't want to be in that state. And that's actually part of what the panic and thinking it is about. It's trying to figure out a way out of this feeling. That's what the thinking is doing. It's how can I work my way out of this feeling? But that tends to just feed the panic, feed the anxiety. So if you can, let go of thoughts around it. And notice if you consciously try to let go of the thoughts, not to suppress them, not to push them down. If you're trying to suppress or push down panic thoughts or anxiety thoughts, it can kind of feed from underneath. But to just see if you can let go in favor of paying attention to what it's like to feel this way. And in particular, what does it feel like in the body? That is probably the best grounding for the attention and a really good way to let go of the thinking around it, to give yourself something concrete to pay attention to in your body. What's going on? With anxiety, there might be a kind of constriction in the throat or a feeling of fluttering in the stomach or a feeling of contraction in the stomach. Can you just recognize those physical sensations? Now, if you're paying attention to those kinds of physical sensations, it's really helpful then to not be telling yourself, I'm paying attention to panic or I'm paying attention to anxiety. But because you're actually paying attention to the physical sensations. So the physical sensation of contraction in your stomach isn't anxiety. It's a manifestation of the anxiety. It's a physical manifestation. But it's not the anxiety itself. The anxiety, the panic are mental activities. They're things happening in the mind. They're mind states. So when we turn our attention to the body, we're not paying attention to the panic or anxiety directly. We're paying attention to the results of it, the way it's impacting our body. So being clear that that's what you're paying attention to. At one point, and I might have told this story recently, I'm not sure. At one point on a meditation retreat, I was waiting for an interview. And in that particular situation, I often experienced anxiety. It was a 3-month retreat, and we didn't speak. It was a silent retreat. And we spoke every 2 or 3 days to a teacher. So the act of going to a teacher to speak to the teacher brought up some anxiety. Not only just the fact that I was going to be speaking after not speaking for a few days, but what was I going to say to the teacher? How was it going to sound to the teacher? You know, really wanting, there was some, you know, selfing going on of, you know, wanting to look good to the teacher, wanting to say things that would make them approve of me. So there was all this going on, creating some anxiety for myself while I waited for the interview. And on this particular day, while I was waiting for the interview, the person in front of me, the person who was in the interview and ahead of me, took a long time. So they went over their time, and I was waiting outside the door for quite a long time. So I was observing this feeling of anxiety for a long time. And I recognized or saw that it wasn't particularly diminishing, this feeling of anxiety. I had been paying attention, you know, to the feelings in the body. The whole body felt like it was quivering and, you know, shaking. But I had been saying to myself that I was, you know, I was using the noting practice, and saying to myself, anxiety, anxiety, and feeling this quivering in my body. And at some point, after a long time of doing this and realizing this, it wasn't shifting at all. There was nothing happening. I got curious about that because often in the paying attention, there's something that shifts. If you're simply being aware of what's happening, there's often some shift that happens around it. And so I got kind of curious about that, and I began looking more directly at the physical experience of the quivering and stopped using that name or note of anxiety in the mind and just recognize the body is quivering. And what I discovered to my surprise in that moment was that actually it was not anxiety that was happening. It was rapture that was happening. And rapture can have a lot of, you know, odd experiences, energetic experiences in the body. So the context of the situation that I was in, because I was waiting for the interview, led me to believe that I was experiencing anxiety, and yet I wasn't experiencing anxiety when I actually let myself come into the physical sensations. So sometimes our physical sensations can mislead us. And we can, if we have a habit or a pattern of anxiety or panic, we might experience some similar physical experiences, and then the mind will assign anxiety or panic to it because it seems like the body's feeling this, so I must be panicked or I must be anxious. So that's another thing to look at, is actually, you know, where is this belief that I have anxiety coming from? I mean, are there actually thoughts going on there and that it's clear there's anxiety, or is it simply a bodily state? Is there some bodily experience happening that I'm interpreting as anxiety? When it is anxiety, you know, as I said, turning the attention to the experience can be really helpful. But sometimes we find that it's really hard. If there's a pattern that's really strong in our minds, particularly around things that we're fearful around, you know, we can be fearful or we can be afraid of fear. We can be anxious about anxiety. We can get in a panic about panic. And that really tends to feed the cycle. And if you find that in trying to pay attention or trying to bring your attention to anxiety or panic actually sucks you into it, you know, that you find that the mindfulness cannot meet that anxiety or panic, then often it can be helpful to put aside, to not directly pay attention to that feeling, to turn your attention to something else in your experience. Something neutral in your experience, preferably, is what I found helpful. So that you're staying in the present moment, but you're not directly focusing on the feelings of anxiety or the feelings of panic. Because sometimes the mindfulness is just not quite strong enough to meet some of these strong emotions. And in that case, it can be helpful to learn a skillful way to say not now, to put aside, you know, to allow it, to not try to suppress it or push it down or push it away, but to turn the attention to something else that's happening in your experience. In any moment, there are thousands of things going on in your experience. And our minds get pulled into certain patterns and certain things that tend to congeal around who we are. So if there's something going on that feels threatening, or that feels like this is threatening my identity or threatening my security, then our attention kind of gets riveted to those things. And yet there's many things going on in our experience. There's seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, things going on in the mind all the time in this never-ending flow of experience. And the manifestation of panic or anxiety is only one part of that. So if you can turn your attention to something else that's happening in your experience, not to try to ignore or push away that panic or anxiety, but simply to just essentially acknowledge it and say, I see you, but I also see that if I try to pay attention to you, it will just suck me into it more. So I'm going to turn my attention to this other thing right now. That's been really, really helpful for me. I spent a couple of years working with anger in that way because I saw that anger just would suck me in, and that the mindfulness was not strong enough to meet that anger. So I found that if I just acknowledged the anger, it simply acknowledged it and said, I see you, but not now. And then I turned my attention to something else. And in particular, I often found that I was walking when these bouts of anger would come up. So I put my attention in my feet, just the feet hitting the ground. And that allowed me to stay present, but not feed the cycle of the anger. So that's a way to work with things when they're strong or overwhelming, is to acknowledge them, but then turn your attention elsewhere. With something like a panic attack, and I don't know if a panic attack was what you were, probably not, but... Okay. With a panic attack, it seems as though there's some kind of... Some trigger probably in the environment that sets off something that creates this response. And often it's unknown. It's like the people that I know who have panic attacks know that there's nothing to be panicking about, but they can't prevent this experience from happening. It's like they're just walking down the street and suddenly it's like they're in a state of panic. Or they're in a meeting and suddenly they feel this panic coming up. And there's nothing in particular that seems to be the cause. So in that kind of situation, I had one person come to me and he was saying that, I see that there's nothing, there's no particular reason for this. And so I'm trying to go tell myself that there's no particular reason why I need to be upset. So he had been looking and trying to analyze, why is this happening? There's no particular reason for it to be happening. Why is it happening? And so he was trying to work with it in that way. This particular person was a scientist and he was very attuned to causes and conditions. And so he thought that if he could convince himself there was not a good why, that the mind would let go of the panic attack. But this didn't work for him very well. And I suggested that he simply notice what was happening. That's it. Just notice what is happening in this moment. The pounding of the heart, the feeling of contraction in the body, the tension in the neck. What is actually happening in the moment? And as he did that, it actually was quite remarkable for him how quickly he was able to do this. And he discovered within a very short time that he could short-circuit the escalation of the panic attack by simply just coming into his body and just noticing contraction, tension, tightness, pounding, pressure, all of those things, and that they wouldn't escalate if he just noticed what was happening. So that's a really powerful tool. And that works also for anxiety and panic. Also, that turning attention back when there's thoughts going on, turning the attention back and just looking at what is happening. What does it feel like to be a person in this state? And attending to the experience, letting go of the thoughts around it, often then the panic or the anxiety has a chance to let go or wind itself out because it's not being fed anymore. So that was how did that do for you? Do you have any follow-on questions around that?
No, thank you. So that discussion, thank you, Maureen, for starting it, because I think that sparked a question that I have about something that's been happening. So when fear, or let's say what I think is fear, hits, I try to do the mental noting or sense what's going on in my body. I think where I get into trouble is when circumstances change for me suddenly, and then I become fearful of them, and then I sense the tension in the neck and the shoulders or in the mid-back. I try to do the noting and say, tension or fear. Then I tend to send those arrows. I tend to judge just the note. And for me, sometimes it's so hard to not just note and then let go.
So what do you mean by judge the note?
You know, so it's kind of what you were talking about with that self-identity, getting wrapped up in the identity of the anxiety. Sometimes I'll say, okay, tension, and then I'll be like, okay, tension. And it almost becomes like I'm noticing it too much, like I'm so aware of it that I'm starting to feel kind of judgmental against myself because I'm noticing it there. And maybe perhaps there is, I'm sure that there's some aversion to it being there, and there's also some desire for it to go away. and I know it's a human experience, so. But I'm just wondering if you can talk a little bit about that.
So yeah, the judgment around around what we notice is, it's pretty common actually, especially if there is anxiety, aversion to what we're noticing. So it may be that you need to kind of back up and notice the aversion as opposed to paying attention to the tension or tightness. There's aversion around it. So what does that aversion feel like? I mean, so there was the anxiety, and that created the tension in your body, and then you're noticing it, and there's aversion to the noticing. So one of my teachers, Sayadaw Utejaniya, says if there's resistance or aversion, you know, if there's resistance to what you're noticing, then you really need to recognize, and he says clear the resistance before you even try to pay attention to what you're resisting. So to take in the fact, and I think that this is a settling back and opening up in experience, to not try to be quite so focused. It sounds like you may be kind of narrowing or focusing down on the tension or tightness, and instead maybe trying to be a little more open with the kind of whole picture, the bigger picture. You know, so that we can get a little too narrow sometimes. Like, you know, okay, I know that paying attention to the body, you know, is what I'm supposed to do, so I'm going to pay attention to that, you know, 5 inches of my neck, and it gets a little contracted and tight, and the mind is just trying to do that and thinking, you know, if I just can pay attention to this just right, then it'll go away. So to take in a little bit larger feeling of that state, you know, so you could try that, and you know, okay, there's resistance, and does that resistance manifest anywhere in the body? And there may be a big feeling. I mean, you know, often when we think of paying attention to the body, we zero in on places in particular where there's particular tightness or tension, but we can also take in a wider experience. You know, we can take in a bigger feeling of the body. And so just sitting here right now, can you kind of feel the entire body? Not zeroing in on any particular place, but just feeling the kind of vibration or the posture or just the sitting here. Can you feel a sense of the whole body, and relax as you do this? Can you just relax and see if you can take in the feeling of the whole body? Relaxing is helpful here. So if we try to figure out what it is, it gets in our way. So you might, in this exploration, feel some parts of your body for a while, and then you might feel other parts of your body. Like you might feel some kinds of sensations in your leg or your butt, and then you might feel sensations in your hands or your head or your chest. Just kind of allowing the attention to be really broad and taking it in a broad way. Is this making sense to any of you? Can you feel that? How about others of you? Yes. So this kind of broader approach can also help if you tend to kind of zero in or narrow down your attention. You know, kind of take in a bigger picture of it. And the resistance piece, sometimes just recognizing or, you know, acknowledging, yeah, there's resistance here. That can change our relationship to it. Because sometimes what's happening is we're paying attention to the thing and we kind of know the resistance is there, but it's more like it's the motivating force behind the attention as opposed to being something we're paying attention to. So you can, if you can just recognize and just even say to yourself, yeah, there's resistance. There might be a shifting around that. Or there's aversion. You know, can you, and again, opening up, I find open to the whole body around aversion. You know, there can kind of be a tensing in the whole body when there's an aversion happening. And so, you know, okay, you know, aversion impacts the body, and can I release that? And also just, I know you've heard this probably many times, but there's no need to judge your experience. Whatever is happening in your experience is what is happening. And even if you're reacting to it, that's just what's happening too. So if you can notice it, and sometimes this backing up or taking in a broader experience of, okay, what else is going on here? So if you find your, you know, and it sounds like actually you were talking about using the noting. And you were saying, you know, tension, you know, that you were kind of hearing it in your mind almost, that there was a tension around the tension. You can use that noting tone of voice as some feedback for you that there's something going on there. So, you know, okay, tension isn't really what's happening here. You know, there's this aversion that's kind of motivating it. That's really what's happening. One thing I like to think about a way I like to approach experience for myself is to think of it as layers. You know, so it's like, you know, there's something happening, like the tension, and then, you know, there's, you know, some aversion or resistance to that tension. And that's actually on the outside. It's an outer layer. It's a reaction to that tension. And so, in our sitting practice and in our daily life practice as well, it's really helpful to just be with that, whatever the outermost, most obvious thing is. And that's a way to explore in our experience. You know, what's most obvious here? So to, as you're exploring this, you know, opening up and saying, what is going on here? And just taking a very big approach, you know, having a kind of a big mind around what might be going on and seeing, well, what's obvious here? What's the most obvious thing in my whole experience? And sometimes that can be surprising. You know, there may be something else going on that you hadn't quite noticed. So those are a few thoughts. There's probably more to say, but yeah.
Okay. As a follow-up to that, we said maybe you're averse to this negative emotion or negative thing, and your teacher said, well, you need to clear that, the resistance, or clear the aversion. I don't understand how to do that. So, I mean, if you look at it and you say, okay, I'm anxious, and then I'm tense, and then you say, well, wait, I'm averse to being tense. Well, isn't that kind of obvious, and isn't that the definition of a negative emotion? You know, I don't know how to break that, or what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little challenging. I mean, what it starts to take is to begin to get familiar with the different flavors of our reactivity. So, for instance, you know, you can be tense, there can be a tension in the body, and there can be a strong identification and a clinging and a tightening around that, which would be the aversion, essentially. So the tension can be there without that kind of aversive response. So another thing that can help in this kind of a situation, which I think bridges a little bit your two questions, is that when I'm exploring something difficult that I tend to get really caught by, I often like to explore three valences of that experience. When it's not present, when it's not there. So essentially, you know, it's either there or it's not there. This tension thing is either there or it's not there. And it's really helpful to notice, particularly if it's something that you strongly identify with or feel like, well, I'm a miserable person or I'm an anxious person. It's really helpful to recognize when that anxiousness is not there. That simple recognition begins to break holes in the identification. Because, you know, we think, well, I'm always anxious. Or if, and I know I've told this story before, I mean, I had this identity of myself as being a miserable person, and when I noticed that I was happy, I would dismiss it. It'd be like, well, yeah, I'm happy now, but I know that really what I am is miserable. You know, so it's like I would put that aside. I didn't really let myself take in the fact that the miserableness wasn't there. So that's a really important piece of this. So noticing when it's not there. When it is there, noticing when it's there and it's simply present, and noticing when there's some extra thing added onto it. So getting familiar with the distinction of what that feels like when we're caught and identified and when we're not caught. So that beginning to get a sense of that begins to give you a sense of what does that extra aversion on top feel like? You know, what does that extra arrow actually feel like? So in exploring your experience, there will be times when the aversion falls away and when it comes back. And so if you can kind of just take an interest in, you know, recognizing when you're caught and when you're not caught, that can help to point out how that aversion is functioning. So that's one piece. Another piece is simply to ask the question. So you were paying attention to something like perhaps anger or frustration or anxiety, and then there's this resistance or this aversion on the outside of it. And they are different things. And that's what I mean by, you know, getting familiar with those two, is to begin to recognize they are different, that there's something extra happening on the outside. When you notice that there's that extra aversion on the outside, can you then perhaps ask the question, okay, what does it feel like to be averse? As opposed to, what does it feel like to be anxious? Or what does it feel like to be resisting? As opposed to, what does it feel like to be angry? So that you're redirecting the mind to this thing that's on the outside. And that can sometimes point you to different experiences in your body. You know, there may be in anger, for instance, there's often a feeling of heat and tension, you know, coming up. And, you know, that's the feeling of the anger, that the pressure, the heat. And the resistance may feel like a pushing in or a pushing down. So there's some different experiences around each of them. So if you can then begin to just connect with, okay, what does this resistance feel like? Well, it feels like this pushing down. Then that's what you're noticing. And then it is not functioning in the same way. You know, when it's not noticed, all of these patterns and all of these habits feed on unawareness. So if we're not aware of them, they tend to get stronger and they tend to reinforce themselves. When awareness comes in, it's like they stop reinforcing themselves. Even though they may not disappear immediately, that if we're able to feel the extra thing, that extra arrow on the outside, it will stop functioning in the same way, in that it will stop feeding itself. It'll stop feeding the resistance or the anxiety or the aversion. So it's partly it's just getting really familiar with these states, and not judging yourself for what you're experiencing. You know, it's like we all have these difficult emotions. We all have these experiences. And a few years of mindfulness practice doesn't eliminate them. What it does is gives us the tools for understanding them. So the first noble truth the Buddha talked about, the first noble truth is to understand our suffering, not get rid of it. I mean, the understanding is the thing that allows it to transform, but we're not like just excising it and cutting it out. It's much more of an organic transformation that happens. So if we can approach our suffering and our difficult experience through this interest and understanding, as opposed to with the agenda to get rid of, if the agenda can be to understand, then there's much less of a tendency to judge ourselves and to to add extra things on the outside of it, if we can just take an interest in understanding. Now, I mean, it does, you know, it's interesting because when we get familiar with this practice a little bit, and we'll go through cycles in our practice, you know, it's like we'll start to see, oh, I see, if I just understand my suffering, then it goes away. And so then the agenda becomes, I'll understand my suffering so that it will go away. And that adds an extra layer again. So over the course of the years of our practice, we have to keep uncovering that subtle clinging, that subtle movement to get rid of. And it keeps slipping in and sneaking in. And, you know, it's not a problem. It's just the way our minds work. So, you know, just kind of, I find humor to be really helpful in this area. You know, it's like, oh, you know, there it is again. You know, there's my mind doing that thing again. And over the years, it gets easier and easier to bring that humor in. Is there anything more? Okay. Anything?
When I'm really busy at work and I'm seeing a lot of patients, and I see that a lot of people are concerned that things are going wrong, I notice that then for myself, the things that are really not a problem at other times seem to become a bigger manifestation for me. Because I'm like, oh, maybe that is a deeper problem. So it's when I'm telling myself something's wrong that it really is a problem.
Yes.
So, I mean, there are times when my neck and shoulders will, you know, there'll be pain, but it's fine. And I'll be in meditation. And it, when I have that bigger approach and I'm just focusing on the body and not that particular aspects, it's really not huge.
Uh-huh.
But then it becomes huge, like on a week like this, when, yes, the outbreak of the swine flu and some other things have come in. So that was helpful to hear that.
Yeah, thank you.
So I have a question about mindfulness of emotions. So you have these body sensations, and sometimes I'm thinking, okay, I'm supposed to now find the emotion behind this, and I am kind of grasping at something. You know, what is it?
So are you saying that you know there's some kind of emotion, but you're not sure what it is?
Or is every sensation an emotion?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Yeah, not necessarily. I mean, and I've found, you know, in a similar way, essentially to that. You know, thinking about that anxiety example I described, where I felt the quivering and the context put together, and it's like, okay, well, I'm feeling anxious. I've seen myself, if some physical sensation appears, you know, there's a physical sensation. I mean, we have bodily habits as much as we have mental habits. And they go together. They're interlocked, you know, that our mental habits will create particular responses in our body, and our bodily experience can create responses in our mind. So they're interlocked. But, you know, I've noticed that, here's a great example. You know, I've been having a lot of hot flashes lately. This is my thing. And one of the things I notice about this is that there's a feeling that comes up that something is wrong. And if I don't recognize that feeling, then my mind starts scanning the environment to figure out what is wrong. So there's just this hormonal release in the body, and it creates this feeling that something's wrong. And if I don't recognize that, the mind will assign something. You know, oh, I'm you know, feeling bad about that thing that I said. You know, it's like the mind will go out and find something to assign this to. And I've seen that in other situations as well. On retreat, I had a very strong pattern of really over-efforting. And I'd get these strong headaches and feel like there was this band of pressure around my head. And then one day I was like, wow, I'm feeling this band of pressure around my head. And it's like, well, I don't feel like I'm making too much effort. But there was this tendency, in effect, you know, almost like to jump on that feeling and start making effort. It's kind of like the bodily experience was prompting me in the direction of what the habit was around it. So sometimes that can be the case, that we end up with a physical experience. There's not particularly an emotion there. Notice if there's a tendency to assign an emotion, a tendency to go out looking for, why am I feeling this way?
Right. Well, I guess so you can have similar sensations, like maybe anxiety feels like this and it is anxiety, or you might just have that feeling come up in the body and you're not especially assigning anxiety to it.
Right.
But I guess I'm asking because I did a guided meditation recently where they were saying, you know, notice emotions. And I'm like, okay. So I was kind of looking because you're doing a guided meditation and they're asking you to do that. So you just kind of...
So there's always
space out,
there's always some kind of emotion going on. Now, it might be a subtle one. It might be calm. It might be boredom. It might be peacefulness. It might be irritation at the suggestion you look for emotions. You know, there can be some subtler emotions going on. It doesn't necessarily have to be a big thing. So, you know, just kind of. In that kind of a situation, it can be interesting to, just kind of open up and say, well, what is happening? You know, what kind of emotion is happening here? I found early in my practice, I found I was not very emotion literate. It was not something I could identify much. I mean, I knew there was something going on. I knew there was some kind of emotion happening, but I couldn't really tell you what it was. And one practice that Gil gave me was to come up with a list of emotions. And I did this by going into this thesaurus and, come up with a list of emotions. And then throughout the day, what I would do at particular times, not particularly when I was feeling anything, you know, not feeling a strong emotion, but just, you know, at any time, I would kind of scan through this list and say, do any of these emotions kind of match what I'm feeling? Yeah, there's just a tiny bit of anxiety here, you know. So I began to kind of educate myself by, you know, reading through these emotions and seeing if there was any that kind of resonated with the state that I was in. So that's another way to play with looking at emotions. Now, emotions, we talk a lot about... looking at the body in the emotions, but there's like three components to emotions. There's the bodily experience, which is a manifestation of the emotion. It's kind of the bodily response to the emotion. There's the mood or tone in the mind, around the emotion. That's the emotion itself, essentially. And there's the thoughts around it. And generally, it's not so helpful to engage in the thoughts, you know, to let those go and turn your attention. We typically suggest turning the attention to the body because it's much easier to, it's a more tangible experience, paying attention to the body, than paying attention to the mood or tone in the mind. But, you know, there is a kind of a feeling in the mind, and that's sometimes how we know what the emotion is. You know, it's like just that general sense of, I'm afraid. Sometimes our body gives us that sense, and often I think that we know what we're feeling because our body has given us some kind of clue. But there's also a tone in the mind around it, and the feeling of fear can feel like, you know, it's just like a kind of get me out of here kind of feeling. It's a retreating. Or the feeling of joy can be a feeling of lightness in the mind. It's just a real buoyancy. So you can actually pay attention to that feeling as well. But it's subtle. It can be subtle. And that's why we often direct people into the body around the emotions, because it's hard to sustain the attention on that subtle emotional tone in the mind. It's a little easier to sustain the attention on the physical results of the emotion in the body. Is there anything more you want to question or ask?
Well, thanks for the language thing. I think that's very helpful. And that's something I've been thinking about is, I feel like I'm learning a new language, kind of, and how do I, because sometimes I'm confused, so, you know, having a list of emotions or a list of sensations, perhaps, would be very helpful.
It's helpful on both sides. I mean, learning the language of our emotions is helpful, and learning the language of the body is helpful. So, you know, with the emotions also, don't forget things like confusion as an emotion. and sometimes, you know, there can be so many things going on. You know, there's fear and there's worry and there's anxiety and there's hostility and there's terror and there's, you know, withering and there's all kinds of things going on. It's like there's no one name that really identifies it. So, you know, we don't really have to get precise about it. When it's a lot of stuff going on, it can just feel chaotic. And chaos, that can be a term that we use for that kind of a state as well. It's just like, wow, this is chaos. And that is actually one of my favorite notes. It's like when things get really crazy, it's like, okay, chaos. This is chaos. I don't have to figure out what all the pieces are. It's just a big experience of chaos. So yeah, getting familiar and remembering that there are some other kinds of emotions that, you know, like chaos, like confusion, that may not be obvious initially. And the bodily language is also really helpful, because often when people pay attention to the body, at least when they're starting to pay attention to the body, you know, it's like they'll pay attention to knee. You know, that will be what they use as a note, knee, or something like that, because the pain or tension is in the knee. But knee is really just an idea. It's an overlay on top of physical experience. So breaking it down into more the actual physical sensations. I mean, you can't really feel knee. What you feel are pressure, tightness, tension, vibration, tingling, pulsing, that kind of thing. And so, you know, it's not so helpful to force yourself to try to get the right name or note, but it is helpful to kind of review the sensations you feel. And, you know, if you feel a new one, you know, okay, there's one. And, you know, identifying it, it's like, oh, that's vibration. You know, and as you get familiar with them, then the word association gets a little easier and we get less confused about it.
So do you have any recommendations for sensations? Just kind of the same thing, look up.
Well, sensations...
Because I'm going to make myself some lists.
Yeah, lists are helpful. You know, with sensations... You might try the thesaurus, but, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, in general, I'll give you a little overview of, you know, some of these. So there's generally four categories of experience that the Buddha talked about in terms of physical experience, in terms of our touch sensations. And those are earth sensations, air sensations, fire sensations, and water sensations. So you can look at that and think about, okay, what would earth be? You know, its weight, its heaviness, its density, you know, that kind of thing. Fire is temperature, coolness, the various gradations of that. Wind is any kind of movement or vibration. That's a lot of what we feel, actually, in our meditation, is that movement, the vibration, the tingling, the pulsing, that kind of movement sensation is a lot of what we feel. And then there's water, which you know, is cohesion and fluidity kinds of feelings. So you can think about those four categories, and then exploring your experience. But you know, using your own language, you know, what is this, you know, tightness, tension, burning, pressure, heat, pulsing. Now we only have 5 minutes, so why don't we sit for the last 5 minutes? Actually, I'll do a little tiny guided meditation on these body sensations. So relaxing your body. Coming into the present moment. And right now I'd like you to explore hardness a little bit. And a good place to explore hardness is with your tongue against your teeth. So just push your tongue against your teeth and feel the hardness of your teeth. You can move your tongue a little bit and explore the different aspects of hardness. And in that exploration now, see if you can attune to the pushing quality of the tongue against the teeth. Not so much the hardness that it's contacting, but the actual pushing feeling. The pressure. And now exploring a little bit in your body, perhaps in your abdomen where you're breathing. Seeing if you notice in the experience of breathing any sensations of hardness and pushing. And letting go of that now, just relaxing. Exploring your breathing in the way you usually explore it. May the beneficial results of our practice together be offered to support the welfare and benefit of all beings everywhere. May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be safe. May all beings live with ease. May all beings be free from suffering.